pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
On the approval of the agenda, I would like to suggest that we add one item under new business, and it will be titled Procedural Change for the Annual Performance Review.
Of the CEO.
Of the CEO.
Make a motion to accept.
As modified?
As modified.
All in favor? Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Awards and presentations.
Yes. Madam Chair, we have a few awards this afternoon. We're recognizing Daniel for 5 years of service. He is a senior power plant operator mechanic in our operations department. Congratulations, man. Johnson is an electric meter technician too in our operations department. We're recognizing Todd for 10 years of service in the organization.
Everything here's a day off. Okay.
Director Ethel Urbino.
I need to enjoy.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Director Manny Ortega. Director Ray Hemphill.
Congratulations. And we have a reserved parking space and some tickets to the Osceola Arts.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Okay, we'll move on to hear the audience or those of you who
have to go to work.
Need to leave can at this time. Seeing no one to come to address us, we'll move on to the consent agenda.
Make a motion to accept.
Second.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any like sign? Nay. Okay, we have no public hearing. Informational presentations, none. Old business, questions for upcoming board applicant interview session.
We already discussed this in the workshop, so I don't know if we have
we
anything.
Need we need a motion to accept
those.
Okay, I move we accept the questions then.
A second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Now, our item of new, very new business, and Grant's going to talk to us about the procedural change for our annual performance review of our CEO.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, board members. At the workshop, we discussed that we want to make sure that we resolve any inconsistencies between current board directive 13-02, which governs president and general manager CEO performance, and our current CEO's contract with the board. So what I'd recommend is that the board, someone on the board make a motion that when the board conducts the annual performance review of the CEO next month, that to the extent of any inconsistencies between Directive 13-02 and the current contract with the CEO, the current contract will prevail. The directive would be temporarily suspended until further action by the board.
I have a question.
Yes.
You said the yearly review. Are we not changing the yearly view to September, and April would be a half-year review?
I thought that the contract requires a review
okay.
now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
But that's why we'll go through it, and then after we've done this one, we can change the date to September.
Very good.
To
Thank
coincide.
You. Okay.
Okay, I have a motion as Grant presented it. Do I have a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Staff reports.
Yes, Madam Chair. We've got two staff reports this afternoon. The first is our quarterly financial and administrative report for the months of October 19 through December of 19. And Kevin Crawford, if you want to run us through that.
Madam Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Brian. Yes, I will be presenting to you this afternoon. Thank you, sir. The results of operations for the first quarter of the fiscal year 2020, just this ended December 31st of 2019. So hard to believe we're already a quarter into our new fiscal year, but here we are. And it seems as though we've got good things to report all the way around as we move through the financials and the accompanying reports today. So we've got 2019 actuals, you can see there, and so far our 2020 actuals are a little shy of a few megawatt hours from what we had in 2019 for this same period of time, but we did manage to exceed budget for this period. We budgeted 382,000 megawatt hour sales. We'd actually had 399, so a bit of an excess there, which you'll see in a moment, commensurate with the increases in revenues accordingly. So that is about a 4.5% over budget sales result, and we'll show you how that affects revenue in our next few slides. But before we do that, we are happy to report that we were able to maintain excellent financial strength while at the same time having a positive net income and meeting all of the fiscal objectives set by the KOA Board of Directors. So also good news. And our achieved net income for this quarter to date is $10.6 million. And we were also able to improve customer service by staying in the bottom one-third metric, also as directed by the board, at the 21.6 mark. And as you're aware, our goal is 33%, so we were able to achieve that and then some. This is a slide that you've asked to see that shows the use of rate stabilization towards staying in that bottom one-third metric. And you can see here that we did not use any of our rate stabilization monies. We budgeted to have deposited 1.7 in rate stabilization at this period. And again, that's just take the annual number, divide it by 12, multiply by 3. It doesn't always work that way. Rate stabilization accumulates differently than on a 1/12th basis, obviously. But That's the budgeted number, but we actually utilized $4 million. We anticipate by year's end all those will even out. But this first quarter, we didn't use any monies to stay in the bottom one-third, but our rate stabilization draw was used primarily for capital, and that $4 million was spent. Our two big expenditures were internal and external line extensions for about $2 million for this quarter, and then we also spent about $2 million on AMI. So we're heavy into the process of AMI installation, so obviously we utilize some of those funds for that capital purpose. Moving into the operating revenue, the income statement side, you can see that we had budgeted metered sales revenue at $56.8 million. We actually achieved $59 million, which, as I explained earlier, is a result of increased sales that you saw, a 4.25% increase. We budgeted to have written off bad debt of about $21,000, but we actually accumulated a return of $81,000, so that's a $2,000 variance. And again, that's a positive move. That means our collections folks are doing a great job, again, recouping those monies that have been previously written off. And that's a very good direction that you always want to see that number go to when you can get it there. Cost of power adjustment, we had anticipated $12 million. Utilization for that, we actually use 16, and it doesn't always work out this way. It's interesting that $4 million is floating through the financials, but the $4 million that you see here, variance in that regard, is because fuel expense was under by almost roughly $4 million. And so since fuel expenses were less than we had anticipated, the COPA mechanism did exactly what it's supposed to do and returned that money to ratepayers through the mechanism. And because that was less than we'd expected, that money went right to where it was supposed to go, back into our ratepayers' pockets, and that's what we're able to do. And the rate stabilization transfer there, you'll see we expected a $1.6 million deposit, and there's that $4 million. We use that on the capital that I showed you on the previous slide, and so that's what rate stabilization was used for in this past quarter. And then there's a variance of $5.6 million. Total operating revenue then, we expected to be at $47 million. We're actually at $51 million. A $4.6 million variance there on the revenue side. Then taking a look at our fuel and purchase power expenses, the man charges, we had budgeted for $17 million. It actually came in lower at $14 million for a variance of $2.8 million. Energy charges were also less. We'd budgeted $10.3 million. We actually spent $7.6 million, a variance of $2.6 million. And you'll see that, don't flash up on the screen, but you'll see that $4.1 million on line 220. And that's that $4 million. Well, we were underspent on fuel, so that returned to the customers, and that was the difference that you saw on the COPA on the previous slide. So total fuel and purchase power, we expected to be at $29 million. It actually came in about $4 million under, at $25 million. And there's that $4 million of variance on fuel and purchase power. So subtracting that number from the previous page of revenue, you'll see we had budgeted $17.7 million. We were actually at $26 million. For an $8.7 million variance, and most of that's related to the fuel. On the operations side, nothing major to report here in terms of variances, some small timing variances, inventory issues, I think, were the reason for that $155,000 variance in operations, probably going into capital projects, which will be capitalized at a future time. And inventory, information technology, they typically pay a lot of those invoices in advance at the first quarter of the year, so there's a bit of a timing false variance is what I call these due to timing. So $132,000, which will likely even itself out through the end of the fiscal year. And then net operating revenue, we expected to be at 8.2 when you subtract those expenses from the previous page. And we're actually at 16.8 for a variance of about $8.5 million year-to-date. Then other operating expenses, we just don't spend a lot of time here. These are all almost always right on target, and so no surprises again for this quarter. Everything comes in exactly where we expected it to be, or very close there too. And we thought our change in net position or net income would be about $1.9 million at this point. We're actually at $10.6 million, and so that's a favorable variance of about $8.6 million. So first quarter, numbers kind of move around a lot, as you can see, as we get into the year. You'll see them come to a better equilibrium, but some false variances, but otherwise, a very good quarter for us to report. Our investment portfolio has not changed that much since you saw it previously. We have about $128 million. We continue to invest those in short-term securities at the SBA, about $62 million of that. And then the rest of that is in smaller government securities and federal instruments or federally backed instruments for security. And you can see here that our effective yield on those down about to about 1.7, right at the benchmark or a little bit there, close to, for the first quarter of the fiscal year. And this is a new slide that we've thrown in. One of the board members had asked to see this updated, and so we did. And we wanted to, you know, just kind of give this to you an idea. It's a nice little visual to how KUA spends a dollar. And our annual budget is around $222 million. And so we take that in these relative amounts that you see here and translate that into a dollar basis and then put those in at their respective percentages. And really that's what these represent on a dollar scale. So our fuel and purchase power, as you would expect, is over half our budget. It's 55% of our total budget. And then our capital project funding is around 18 cents, so the biggest piece of that outside of fuel and purchase power, the revenues that we receive go right back into our system and to continuing to renewal and replace those items that need to be and to enhance reliability for our customers. And then our operations and maintenance, and that's labor and non-labor, is good for about 17 cents. And taxes, transfers, and insurance, the very vast majority of that number is going to be the general fund transfer to the city of Kissimmee. That's about 9 cents of that dollar. And then debt interest expenses, because you would imagine we have very little debt on just in commercial paper at this point on our books. And so we've got about 1 cent of that dollar bill gets spent on debt interest expense. So all in all, a good way to spend a dollar. So at this point, I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Good report.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam
Thank
Chair.
You very much.
Yes. Madam Chair, item K2 is the information technology semi-annual report, and Mr. Jeff Gray is going to tell us what's been going on in IT the last 6 months.
Hello, Board.
Hello.
I'll get right to it. I know you've been here since round two, so you're probably ready to get through all these meetings and presentations. A quick look at our customer trends. The top right-hand side there is over the last 10 years, you can look at what's been happening in our lobby. More customers obviously doing business with us online, not coming in physically face-to-face. And some of the changes that you're hearing about recently with everybody moving into the what's now the cashier area will now be all customer service. This really falls in line with that of how we're adjusting to meet the customers. On the bottom chart there, on the bottom right-hand side, you can see how face-to-face payments have sort of leveled off. We had a drop for many years where it went from approximately 15 to 16,000 face-to-face payments every month, now down to just around 5,000. So we're at one-third of that effectively. And again, our changes currently are meeting the customers in the ways that they want to do business. A lot of that, of course, is because of the e-bill adoption that we have, which is fantastic, over 50% now, 42,000 of our customers doing business with us in that way. Now, when we look at that, if we shift away from the face-to-face business and we go and look at, well, what's happening online, that's the left-hand side of that chart there. This is right from the Google Analytics of our website. And the real takeaway is this item right here on the bottom left. There was a time when we said everything's going online, everything's going to a computer. The truth is that time is now past, and what it is everything is going to a phone. So 60% of our customers right now, if you include both mobile and the tablets, which are also mobile devices, are doing business with KUA today on their phone. And with that, we as an organization need to shift more to phone type of thinking and phone offerings, which we're doing. And I'll start with some of those things that are coming up. So what are we doing to meet our customers where they want to do business with us? Well, starting off, we've got, of course, the new outage by text feature. Great, fantastic adoption, because we sort of said to every phone number we had that was a mobile number, welcome, you can now report your outage this way. That was launched in January 2020. It was one of our goals, which we were happy to meet a little bit ahead of schedule. So all of the numbers that we had, we sent them that initial opt-in. They could then opt out if they chose, I don't want to do this the particular service by my phone, or maybe they're not using that phone for KUA business anymore. They could opt out, no problem. Now, any customer that came to us after the initial launch can still sign up, and that's the ones that would text KUA to that phone number there. That's our 800 number. It's the same number you can call and talk to somebody, so it's not a special separate number. It's our legitimate 800 number. And then they're opted in, so to speak, and then their phone number is already associated in our system with their address and so forth. If it isn't, they can contact us, and we can set that up online. Now, this is a separate channel for us. This is basically all of those horror stories you hear during the hurricanes when you've got 30,000 people out of power, all of them calling. There's no way you can have enough phone lines to accommodate all of those folks. But with text messaging, it doesn't touch a single phone line. The entire thing is digital, comes to us live, and talks back to them through a text. So we're not tying up phone lines at all. Fantastic for several reasons. One, of course, it meets that need, right, to talk to everybody as quickly as we can. It also means their phone isn't being run down while they're on the phone holding to get through and so forth, because we know charging your phone is a luxury when you're out of power. So it really solves a lot of problems. Again, that's the goal, and we met it. We're happy about that. Now let me show you what it's going to look like to the customer. What does this actually feel like when you use it? The first message you see there is what customers got from us when we opted them all in. It just basically says, welcome, and if you were to text KUA to that 800 number, this is what you would get back. So now let's fast forward to literally 1 hour later after we went live, and some people had an outage. It was a small outage, but we just launched it, and they were using it within an hour. It didn't take long for that to be adopted. So here's what they do. They just say the word out to that phone number. What's going to come back is the thing that verifies this address. We're just making sure. And if you have more than one address assigned to your phone number, you'll have an option there, which is handy for people who have more than one. Once they type the letter A or B or the corresponding address, they're going to get a confirmation back that, hey, KUA is aware of your outage. We're on it. We're sending people to the area right now. And how about an outage map? So if you tap this little button here, you can see what's going on. So what have we done? We basically told the customer the things that they want us to know. First of all, what's the number one concern of a customer who's out of power? Does KUA know? We've just given them confirmation of that. Number two, are they on it? Are they going to work on it? How long is it going to be? Here's the outage map. You can see all the details that we have live, and you don't have to call us back to get that. That's live to you at any time you want to look at it. So, again, all through text in the platform that the customers are choosing more than any other to do business with us. And what can happen now is we finish the outage is closed, everything's great, we've told the customer that the power is back on, and then you'll see that sometimes they come back with, yeah, that's great, but what about the street light across, you know, they like this, they want to communicate with us and so forth. We have essentially a loose end. Well, we've addressed that as well. Customer service gets all of these as emails, which is great. So they're going to be able to see everything that our customer writes back to us that isn't part of that initial outage, and then they can follow up with opening a service order or contacting the customer and so forth. No loose ends, very clean system. Really happy with how it's going. And moving on.
The difference in the number of customers that are signed up is a business customers?
Those are any customer that wants to opt in, so that whether they're commercial or residential. 1,000. I'm sorry?
61,000.
Yeah, that's every phone number that we have that wants to be use text. There could be as many as three or four phone numbers for a single household, like husband, wife, and kids want to be able to report the outage. We don't have a way of really differentiating that from that number. We can go and dig and try to figure it out. But that works for both residential and commercial. Other questions?
Commercial wouldn't have a cell phone number for the business account.
So I'm thinking...
They can, no, where's Susan? I think they can put a phone number on there and say.
They can have multiple phone numbers, and it can be a cell phone number. Yeah. If you want to use this feature, you can establish your cell phone number as one of the numbers on your account.
Well, we can explore it if you'd like us to bring something back and show you kind of how it can work. Okay. All right. Other questions? Okay, moving on. AMI Customer Portal going live this month. Soft launch date, March 20th. It'll be a Friday. We're going to be pushing this out to the customers by an email invitation that'll go to all of our customers who have email addresses and saying you can now try this out. It's going to have their consumption data in there right out of the meter data management system. It's about 24-hour lag time. Good to keep in mind that when you're looking at this, you're only going to have as of yesterday at the earliest, and that usually comes over around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. But with that, they can do a lot of the features. One of the goals we had actually was to give customers the ability to sign up for text alerts when they go over a certain consumption pattern, of which they can choose many options. That'll actually be available to them during the launch as well. This is what they look like. I set mine up for any time I go over 8 kilowatts. I set a very low number, so I'd get these every day. And around 1:30 every day, as you can see on the time there, I get this thing that says, you went over 8 kilowatts again. Here's how much you used. This is essentially the gas gauge that we talked about years ago of putting more information in the customer's hands of being aware that yesterday you used probably more than you expected or less, and you have an ongoing way to look at it. And you can go into the portal and see all the way down to the 15-minute increments of what's going on with your consumption. Of course, it's anything new like this, it can be a little overwhelming. We've got some video tutorials that we're going to put in there. Also, of course, the famous K-Way chat assistants that our customers like to take advantage of, also available. And, excuse me, they can also view their bills. And if they want to make a payment while they're in the portal, there is a link where they can go over to the payment side, where they go now to make their payments and do all of that as well. This is the future platform for a lot of our self-service. The things that we do now individually, face-to-face, or even over the phone, a lot of that will be available 24 hours a day inside the portal, and that's a platform we're building on in the years to come. In about 6 months, we're hoping to have the first and most complex feature already in there, and that's start, stop, and transfer service without having to talk to a rep. That's one of the lengthiest interactions Susan's folks have when talking with customers. We have forms for it now, which they can link to as of this month, but eventually it'll actually be an actual automated system doing it. Again, coming to you in March, around the 20th. Now, you've seen and heard about the changes we're making in the lobby. I thought it would be great to show you what we're going to be doing there. When a customer comes in, they're going to sign in as they always have. They'll stop at the receptions desk, give their name, and say what they're here for and so forth. And then they'll be put in the line, so to speak. That central hub that you see over the top there, that's going to have the names of everybody who's waiting. Now, remember, traditionally, a customer service rep came out and got the customers. Well, now that they're all behind glass, that's not really going to work. So overhead, you're going to see a little number appear next to your name if you're Mr. Jones and you're number 4. And then over window 4 at the same time, the name Jones would appear. So it'd be very clear to the customer that I am next. I go to window 4. I see my name, kind of guide them through the whole process. Very efficient. Even two names at the same time can go, you know, to their respective windows. And we'll be testing that. We've got it already designed, and we're on a very quick launch to get this out the door. And behind all that, which is really great, is there is a ton of statistics that even though it's just a click for the rep to say next or to sign them in, and it's very quick, behind all that, we will know, as we already do, how long did that customer wait today? How many people came in the lobby today? What did they come in for? Who was the rep that waited on that particular customer? We have all of that in the background, trackable, and you see some of those statistics actually filter up into your monthly board reports to give you a sense of how many folks are coming through the lobby. So it's all homegrown. We built all that in-house. We're very proud of it, and I think it's going to do a great service for the customers with that personalized waiting in line.
It's a good deal like the DMV is.
Yeah, and even though I think the tax office has something similar as well. They may use numbers, but it's still the idea that I know which window to go to and to take some of the guesswork out of it. I think a lot of people simply just get nervous that someone's going to skip them in line, and so there's an angst to that, and so making it personalized hopefully calms that. Let's look at uptime just very quick. A lot of times we sort of just check a box when we talk about uptime, like, okay, we met the goal and we move on. The board's goal, 99.5% for us. The IT goal for itself, 99.9%. We had a great year, just a few little divots there when we were doing some security changes and it affected some uptime. But, you know, this is only 1%, this chart that you're seeing here. This is 1% of 1% of 1%. It's very, very tiny. And I wanted to kind of quantify that a little bit visually. And so what I came up with was this idea that if we were looking at a building that was 100 stories high, meaning 100%, each floor is 1%, and we're on the top floor of that building and we had some downtime for, say, an hour or two, it would be like a box appearing in that room 2 to 5 feet high once in a year and then disappearing. That would be the size of our uptime. And while you're seeing that, you have to keep in mind that we're talking about being at the top floor and seeing something appear momentarily while sitting on top of 100 floors of reliable IT across the board, not just in one system, but 5. So that's a long way up. That's a lot of uptime to consider when we talk about that tiny little chart that we show you. Now, this is a great achievement for any IT office to have that kind of, you know, substantial achievement, but it's not one system. It's 5 core systems: phones, internet, CIS, FIS, GIS, and then underneath that, a slew of other services that are interconnected supporting that, and also talking to vendors and other partners and so forth. So IT is essentially a sea of little, like a little city, if you will, of servers and computers. To put some numbers to that, this is how many servers we're actually talking about in the IT infrastructure. Hundreds of servers, workstations, over 100 tablets already, and of course the telephones and the security systems and all the inner workings. There's quite a lot to that 99.5, so I didn't want to just rush by that and say, yeah, we made the goal and we're on track for making our goal. That is a tremendous achievement, and I have several of my managers here from IT today, and that is all due to their fantastic work. Now, let's take all that wonderful uptime, and let's say that we got everything working great, and it's perfect, and we've got this fantastic work time. Now, let's bury it in concrete and wrap it in barbed wire, because this is the other reality, the other half of the work, if you will. 50% of it is now locking it up. It has just taken over our reality. And when we look at that, you know, none of us are immune to the headlines. We saw what happened just last year, and according to the experts, this year will be as bad or worse than 2019 in terms of these headlines in both Florida and around the country. And when you look at this, you have to think, surely all these folks had audits and plans and had something in place to prevent this. Surely they weren't just, you know, being casual about their security. And I'm sure they were. And boxing great Mike Tyson said, everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face. And that is more true of cybersecurity than it is boxing. And I'll tell you why. We have a riff in the IT world of where we're still using audits to quantify readiness and quantify how good our IT is. Audits are great financial instruments, and they work great with historical things like accounting, but they don't work so great for an operational resource like IT. They're just something that everybody knew to use, so they started using it. What you really need is a risk assessment where someone literally tries to break in, because hackers are not impressed with your APPA scorecard, and they are not impressed with your latest audit. What they are impressed with is how hard your firewall is to their penetration tests. And so to visualize that, excuse me, let's say this is the K-Way network here, spinning away. Everybody's inside working, doing their thing. And meanwhile, on the outside, 10,600 high risk. These are the worst of the worst attacks against our network in a 30-day period, just the last 30 days, as a matter of fact. So this is every month our life in IT. So while we're trying to keep all the computers running at 100%, look what's happening on the outside. And luckily, we have a firewall to block that. But at the same time, we have to take in certain things from email and so forth. We have to let things in. Half of the emails are being blocked today because of the new system I told you about in our last presentation called Advanced Threat Protection. I'll talk about that in a moment. But out of the 200,000 emails sent to KUA, half of them are infected and meant to do harm, on top of the people who are trying to break into our network. Just another day in IT. Once inside, of course, we have a whole other set of things that I've defined to you before about what we're doing to protect our customers' data and our workers and, of course, our business. A lot going on to protect that. So while this graphic plays, you saw this last time on the advanced threat protection and how we have all these layers. This is the work that is done before any of this email ever makes it to KUA. So before it even hits our network, we're running a process to block it, and that's where we've been able to block 100,000 of the 200,000 that were coming in because they had some of the worst of the worst packages inside them. So while that's running, of course, we also, again, have the firewall doing its job. And all of this, you know, scanning and protecting and all these elaborate locks that I've put on our systems, and, of course, having some of the best tech people in the utility industry literally working for us, all of that is great, but you as a board cannot take my word for it. You cannot trust that I am doing everything I can, because I am on the inside of this gate here. I'm on this side of it saying everything we can do is being done. What you need is a third party, someone on the outside with the tools and the wherewithal to try to break in, to pick the locks and try to kick the door in. Otherwise, it's just a plan, and we know what happens to people with plans. So we went out and we worked with the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency. This is a branch of Homeland Security. And you may recall back a few years ago, we had a risk assessment. It was $40,000. We had to do an RFP, quite involved, and it was for one risk assessment, one hit. What we want and what we wanted and what we got for free at no cost, by the way, was for CISA to come and scan our ports every single day until we reached a level of zero. Then they would come back weekly. So we, for $40,000 a crack at no cost now, we're able to have someone trying to pick the locks, trying to kick in the door, running every known vulnerability test there is against our systems and telling us how we did. It took about 90 days for us to get from about 50 items that were potential risks, and there was a lot of far-fetched if someone had the right tool at the right time. And you know, but we wanted to take the hardest training there was, which was this, and let them try to scan us. So now we're at zero. We're very happy with that. We've been at zero for weeks. And every time we change anything, we know we need to wait for that report to come in for this week and see, did we miss anything? And that, for you as a board or for financial folks, is the thing that verifies that it isn't just me telling you we've got great security. It's the federal government's best hackers trying to break in and telling you that we can't get in either. There is no guarantee tomorrow someone could release something that gets around all of it and we start all over. But at least we can say that all that could be done with the known knowledge is being done. And with that, I'll take any questions.
That's impressive.
That's the little screenshot from the report. Those beautiful zeros. We look for that every week now, but that tells us that this is from the CISA scan that we're good.
I'm very impressed with what you're doing, Jeff. I am.
Thank you
for being as vigilant as you are. I know it's very important to you personally, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. And like I said, tomorrow everything a new thing comes out, so we have to be extremely vigilant. And this was the only way.
Manny's got a question.
If you can answer, maybe Susan can. When you mention e-bills, there's a surcharge as associated with it, and we were going to be addressing that in the future. I don't know if that ever happened.
We did lower. You're talking about the payment, the fee for payment? Yes, that fee was lowered. Yeah, that fee has been lowered. We are now $350. Yeah, $350. It used to be $495 for a customer bill. We got it down to $350 by renegotiating the contract. And that the value of that, I know no one likes to have an extra fee, but the value of that is that KUA receives 100% of the payment by having an offset fee go to a third-party payment handler, so we're not taking the credit card fee. They are. Yeah. Okay. Other questions? Thank you.
Very good, Jeff.
Thank you. Okay. Grant.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. First, I wanted to thank all of you for the excellent two rallies we had last month, the FMEA rally. Right now, it's House Bill 653 that we were so concerned about is going nowhere. The other bills we were concerned about don't seem to have traction. The session will end shortly, so we're hoping we'll get out of Tallahassee unscathed. In terms of D.C., I thought we had an excellent discussion with Congressman Soto about anti-fracking bills, I certainly appreciate our discussion with him in terms of keeping the pressure on FEMA to make sure that utilities like ours are properly reimbursed for reimbursable expenses for storm restoration. Thanking him for his continued support of LIHEAP financing for our more disadvantaged customers, and expressing our concerns about the green energy plans that are floating around Congress right now, making sure that these are reasonable goals that factor in not just the need to address climate change, but do so in a way that doesn't have traumatic price impacts on our customers. And then the board had asked us to look at Directive 89-1. That's the directive that requires board members to go through the CEO when they want to discuss things with staff. I looked at that, and I looked at our city's charter, since we're created by an amendment to the city's charter, and what we're doing is consistent with what the city is doing, and I will quote from the city charter verbatim. Except for the purpose of inquiries or investigations under this charter, the commission, the city commission, and its members shall deal with city officers and employees solely through the manager. That's what our directive is consistent with, that the one that we have right now. I would add that the city of Lakeland's language is almost identical to the city of Kissimmee's. We do have the exception, and that's for inquiries or investigations. So if you had a situation with a CEO years in the future that you felt was serious and that you felt you could not get a straight answer from that individual, you weren't happy with how your interaction was going, every board member, I think, then would have the option, if not the duty, at a public meeting to say, I want to investigate what's going on. That's what the system's designed to do at the city, and I think that, at the very least, with whistleblower protections and otherwise, this board would have that ability as well. But our directive as currently written, as far as I can see, is consistent with what is done at our parent organization, the City of Kissimmee.
Would you clarify that means that we cannot contact a staff member for information?
I believe that what you can do is you would need to let, if you as a customer have a right to contact the appropriate staff member to deal with your own customer issue. But if you want to contact a staff member pursuant to the directive, you need to let Brian know, hey, I need some information and I'd like to contact X about it.
I'm trying to find where it is in our bylaws or our documents.
It's Directive 89-1, which also cites our bylaws. The bylaws state as follows. The general manager shall be subject to the control of the board of directors of the authority in meeting assembled, but no director shall otherwise attempt to dictate or to interfere with the general manager or give orders to any officials or employees or undertake in any manner to direct the utility's affairs. That's cited in the directive. The directive says no director shall approach any KUA employee other than the general manager directly to see such information, data, and or discussion. Now, the way that's operated over my years here is it's a reasonableness. You're allowed to say hello to folks. You're allowed to ask general information. But if you really want to get specific information from a staff member, the CEO needs to be in the loop. And that's consistent with what the city does. It's consistent with what our neighbor, Lakeland, does. It's consistent with what a lot of government agencies do. And the reason for that is they don't want staff members getting conflicting signals as to who's their boss.
And I think that our original documents almost speak to that more loudly than the resolution or whatever it is. The bylaws do. Yeah, that's pretty direct that what you can and can't do. So
I have a question on that then. What happened last year? We were out of bounds in doing that when we would contact?
No. You had the CEO's permission. You went and told, as I recall, if we're discussing when you were chair, you went and let the CEO know, I want to speak to folks.
Okay.
And, yeah. There was nothing out of bounds about last year at all.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
It's a matter of courtesy. Also, there's no reason for us to really contact other people without talking to the head.
Agreed.
Just following the chain of command.
Not our job.
And if something's bad enough that you need to investigate it, the city charter provides for that at a public meeting. The board member has that option to say, I want to look into this. That's how it's supposed to go.
Do you have something to add?
No.
Okay.
And that's all I have, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Here are your reminders. I would mirror Grant's comments about the two rallies last month, and I would also thank Grant. We all know that he struggled in D.C. with coughing and sneezing and did it really well, so we appreciate it. It was a successful rally. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Do you want to check that scheduled board meeting? We're not meeting until June.
Yeah.
But other than that.
We'll see. We will see each other in April.
Yeah. God, we had a lot to do in April. That's why I was looking at this. Okay.
Okay. Let's get that. We'll get that updated and sent out.
Right. Manny?
I had the privilege of attending the memorial service recently, and I must say that it was done with respect, with dignity. It showed what the KUA family is all about, and it makes me feel proud to be part of this organization. So congratulations to those folks that put that together. It really shows how we feel about each other as a family that we have here. So thank you. Thank you for what you guys do on a daily basis.
And I had every intention of being there, but Grant shared his coughing and sneezing, so I couldn't get there. Okay.
Ethel? No questions.
Jane?
Nothing, just good meeting, a lot of information. I always appreciate it when our VPs come up and give us the information. They make it so we can understand it. I always appreciate that.
And we'll be thinking about you next week when you have her knee worked on.
Got a new knee on Monday.
So, okay. Thanks for everything, y'all, and I'll adjourn this meeting.
Right.